Yeah, now he's talking. If I throw something at him, or if I make sound on the ground,
is there a frog in your room? Quiet.
Yeah, I'm trying to toss stuff at him. I don't know where he is. It's a weird setup in this room. So
is he an alt-right frog? Is it Pepe?
Yeah, it's Pepe.
I don't remember his name. Yeah, I hear him. He's in your room.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in so there's like two
it's
parts
so
of
weird.
This room, and half of it is my stuff, and then
half of it is the frog
family's
stuff.
Yeah, the frog's area.
You room with a frog.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. Yeah, talk a little more.
All right. Hey, I'm here.
And I'm here as well.
Michael W., are we recording?
Yeah, we're recording. I'm doing sound checks, though, but this will go on what I send you. Talk some more, brother.
All right. Here I am. This is Nick.
All right. It's close enough. Close enough for rock and roll, I think. So what do you want to know, young Nick, who lives with a frog?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you just about, I had Jeremy.
Girls? You want to talk about girls? You're starting to notice them now? You're old enough? Yeah, is that what we're going to do? Is that where we're going? I'll help you, Nick. I have a lot of experience. And, plus, you know, I was a little whore for like most of my life, and then I got married, and I've been happily married for 11 years. So I think I can tell you both ends of girls. What do you want to know, Nick?
This is a good question. This wasn't exactly where I planned to go.
I'm kidding, but I'll answer it if you got questions.
I'm wondering. I'm trying to come up with something. I guess I'm like, so to give background, I don't meet girls very often. I live out in the woods.
You live in the woods with yaks and your family. Yeah, right? You're like one of those homeschool kids. Actually, you're a self-school kid. Your dad's the principal and you dropped out. That must make for great Thanksgiving dinner conversations.
Yeah, I think that people were very skeptical. Now, actually, this last conversation we are at Thanksgiving, we pretty much just talked about marketing tips. It was a marketing tips for Nick session.
Yeah,
And that was actually kind of cool. It was better than
you know what you really need
to go to college.
You know what you really need to do, or this would have worked with my dad, is you need to make a lot of money. You need to make more money than your dad, and then you can't say anything. Although maybe you still could. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm hoping that Yak School will pay off in the
Yak School
in the long run.
You got to write the book $20 Yak School, because you probably you know, generally people make more money teaching how to do stuff than doing it. That's been my experience.
Yeah, I think so. That seems like with all the like marketing gurus out there, it's all people who
those who can't teach. I can do and teach, but I make more money teaching, you know, so I have written a bunch of books on filmmaking and writing, $30 film school, $30 writing school, $30 music school, made more money at those than I've made at music and film. Well, not film. Actually, I've probably made as much on those three books as I made in those three careers combined, which was, you know, low six figures on each end over 20 years time, which amounts to a McDonald's paycheck doing what I like, which is a success compared to most people. It's funny because most people are like, you scrape by. I more than scrape by now, but I'm doing a lot of other stuff. Like I'm doing consulting. You know, people are like, how do I get good audio? And I'm like, okay, the first tip's free. Then it's $75 an hour. And, you know, doing voiceover, and actually just figured out that I was owed some royalties on music that I wrote years ago, and figured out, you know, that I actually had just to tell ASCAP it was there, and started getting some of that. But it's not a ton of money, but, you know, it's a little more than it's like the manager at McDonald's. That's my wage at art for the past, pretty much since about the year 2000. That's when I started making money doing what I do. And also, you know, we live somewhere really cheap. My wife has a job. We share one car because, you know, that works out pretty much. If I need it, I either get up early with her and take her to work and then have the car for the day and then pick her up at the end of the day, or take a taxi. And it's not very often I need to go anywhere. I'm a homebody. I've kind of traveled the world and done everything. And now I just want to be left alone and yell at the world in one direction and not listen to what they say back. Because they're stupid. Yeah. Most people are stupid, man.
I think so. That's my experience.
Except your listeners. They're smart.
That's right. I think that's kind of the life that I'm shooting for with the farm, because this is just what I do. I don't need to make a lot of money. I think it'd be cool. Yeah, it'd be really fun to have a lot of money, because then I could do more stuff. But to me, I think that's what matters, right? Is are you doing stuff that you enjoy?
Yes.
If you're doing shit that you don't enjoy and you're
You know what? I just panicked because you cussed. I forgot we're not on radio. I'm so used to being on radio with you, you know?
I need to introduce you, but I think most of my audience knows who Michael Dean is.
All right,
but,
go ahead.
If you don't know,
I'll multitask and do some things while you talk nice about me. Because that's the kind of guy I am, because I got other things to do, but I'll give you my full attention. But while you're praising me, I'll be doing things to praise me about next year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Michael got me started. When I first got into the ideas of libertarianism, it was mostly, I guess, from my dad was the introduction. But when I started getting interested in like actually looking at the like out of political ideas, I decided that, well, I need to be educated on this. I need to look for somebody to listen to. So I looked for a podcast with the name Freedom in it or something, and I found Freedom Fiends. And back then, you guys weren't even on. Maybe you weren't on LRN when I first started listening.
I think I was, but we were not on radio.
Yeah, not with.
Did you join the show before we were on radio?
No, it was afterwards, because I remember, because it was probably a year after I started listening, you started Michael Dean After Dark.
Yeah.
That's when.
Which really was the Freedom Fiends. Like, how that happened was, so Freedom Fiends was started by Nima Vedati and I as a podcast in 2011. About 9 months later, we got on, and it was a podcast like this, like asynchronous, like recorded and not streamed live anywhere while we did it. And I actually used to spend like 9 hours editing the show and making it perfect. And then I realized, like, I got really good at that, and then realized, you know what? I can spend about 10 minutes editing this and make it even better without, you know, sterilizing it. And a lot of people, you know, think, oh, I can fix it in the mix or whatever. But what you really want to do is learn to quickly get great audio each time. This better sound good. When I play this back, if it doesn't sound good, I'm going to throw it away. I'll cut out the part where I'm bragging about my audio prowess. But the levels might be a little off, but I'll fix it in the mix. You don't want to fix it in the mix unless you're smart like me and can really fix it in the mix. But, you know, you don't want to like go, oh, there's hum, I'll get rid of it later. You know, any kind of fixing in the mix like that you do other than straight editing, cutting, is going to make it sound worse a little bit, you know, just overall affect the sound. Like a lot of times the noise reduction, you can hear this like kind of whispering robot sound underneath after noise reduction. Like it sounds like bad MP3 encoding kind of artifacts. So we did that not live. And then we got on LRN and became live once a week on Sunday afternoons. Maybe it was Saturday and Sunday. I think it was Saturday and Sunday on LR, on the slot that we're now on radio. It's weird. We have a weird radio schedule because we're on 12 hours off on the weekend. We're on like midnight to 2 central weeknights, and we're on noon to 2 p.m. central weekends. And on the weekends, we're on a lot more stations, a lot bigger stations. And at night, it's just weird. I love night too. It's just weirdos. Weekends are just replays anyway, but it's almost completely different stations. So how did we find you? You won a contest. You didn't really win a contest. Yeah. You called in, and I was like, back when we took calls, when I realized I don't like to listen to the world. I got what I needed, which was you and a couple other people, and then turned off the phones. But I wanted to help you, so I just made up I don't know if you know this. I made up a contest on the spot.
But I didn't know.
I was like, hey, we're having a contest to give away a microphone. Do you want to win? Enter. And you were like, you entered. And I'm like, you won. Because I really wanted you on the show. Because you were smart and young and reminded me of a young me without the heroin at 14. No, 15. What? No. Acid. I was doing acid at 15. Don't try this at home.
What drugs you were. But yeah, so Michael got me started in
I got you started. You should just stop the podcast right there. Yeah, I was doing heroin at 15. Yeah, Michael got me started. End right there.
Yeah, exactly. And right about 15 too is when I called in. So I've gotten to know Michael from listening to the show and just working with you on the Fiends and putting together the Anarcho-Yakitalism podcast. I think you did pretty much all of the work. I mean, you taught me how to do it, but at the same, like, I mean, you've already done most of the work too. Put that together. So
back off your mic a little bit. I'm still doing it. Back off your mic. I just got a big when you said a P.
Oh,
you're about a half inch too close. Go ahead.
All right.
And speak up, son. Yeah. You're on radio. Well, I know you're not.
Yeah, this is Jackie with Nick, but I still need to be loud.
I know. It's true.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think you're one of the most interesting people because you have a crazy life.
The most interesting person in the world. And now I have a very uncrazy life. Like, you know, I lived more by 30 than most people do in six lifetimes. And then I was like, I'm going to get a lady and go out to the, you know, just lock myself in the house and not go anywhere. Although then I got really sick and I couldn't go anywhere, but I'm actually slowly getting better. I'm kind of, what I say now, I was like dying for like 4 years. And what I say now is that I'm not out of the woods, but I'm no longer down a deep well deep in the woods.
Yeah.
With a zombie.
Yeah.
Down the well.
That's good. Yeah, you had quite a bit of it was kind of, I was worried for a while.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm glad that you're recovering too.
Yep.
But you gave me my start in this whole business. Not that I'm really making money
business
either, but
I'm not either. Somebody said today, like somebody was misinformed about net neutrality. Some musician friend of mine and said, posted this thing, if the web loses net neutrality, independent musicians will lose their careers. And I replied, do any independent musicians have a career anymore? I mean, I do it for a hobby, man. It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been catching up with that net neutrality debate, but it's hard to make a... I think that's part of one of the things that you've talked about and which kind of turned me away from trying to make money at this too is all these celebritarians just suck, right? Everybody that's making money preaching liberty.
Well, you know, the crap floats to the top in a lot of things. Like, you know, a really good example is like McDonald's. And like McDonald's is actually better than most of these people you're talking about.
Yeah.
But, you know, McDonald's isn't the best restaurant in the world, but it's the most popular. And I'd say these people are more like, you know, herpes isn't the best thing you can have in your body, but it's very common and won't go away, you know, and easy to come by. Careful, Nick.
That's going to be a quote that gets written down. Celebritarians are like herpes.
Well, do we want to name some? No, let's not. Let's actually, you know, someone actually, a former fiend who got fired and is probably bitter about it. Like I was complaining about some other former fiend. And the other former fiend was like writing a millionaire friend of mine and saying, I don't believe you have lots of money. Prove you have a lot of money. Okay, it was MK Lords said, you know, prove to me you have a lot of money by sending me some, which is just the most ridiculous thing to say, especially to someone who doesn't like you, to Virgil, who does not like her. And I don't like MK Lords either. She's a pest. Man, I was not going to go there. Damn.
No, I'm having her on the show next week.
Good. She can listen to this. I think she's homeless and like couch surfing. Which is funny because she's like often asked to speak at women in crypto, you know, events and panels. And she's so broke, she's trying to beg crypto from people who don't have any, who don't like her, who have a lot of money. And I think she's homeless and couch surfing like Davy Barker. I'm not positive, but, and you know, those two have horrible audio. They did a podcast recently. Have I taught you nothing, MK Lords? Jim Jesus hates me, but he sounds great. Like if you ended up hating me, Nick, you wouldn't suddenly forget how to make good audio.
No.
I don't think Jim's probably on the week after, but I don't hate Jim. Just Jim and I aren't talking for the next four decades. You know, after that, maybe we'll talk, but,
Well, I get along with MK a lot, and I don't have any real beef with her. Except
that's because
that
you're 18 and have hormones, and she's a semi-cute chick until she opens her mouth.
But she should get off iTunes, off SoundCloud, and produce the podcast.
Now, that's not really the problem. Now, I've complained about SoundCloud for podcasting because you're not really in control of your feed. And if they go down, which they just laid off like a third of their workforce, so they might. You know, here's what I learned in 1997. There was a website called mp3.com, and I was a really early adopter of MP3s and started putting music out and even like spoken stuff before there were RSS feeds. Like, oh, I recorded me talking today. Here's a recording. And before there was YouTube. And I loved MP3s. I was like, I've been waiting for this my whole life. I've been, you know, I can sit down and record something and share it with more people in one day than, you know, I did in a whole, like, almost killed me tour of America with a band in 1988. So I really got into it. And there's a site called mp3.com. And they were like, you know, build your brand on mp3.com. Like, here's your custom URL. And it was like mp3.com/kittyfeet, because Kitty Feet was my website. Mm-hmm. I still have it, but it was my first website. And I mean, I made stickers. I made buttons. I made business cards. I made that my, like, this will be my homestead for the rest of my life. And, you know, it was like their selling point was mp3.com is free. Yeah, we have some ads, but this is free. So then one day they just, and I built this and handed out 1,000 business cards, and like people were visiting my stuff there. And then suddenly they were like, all right, starting tomorrow, it's $40 a month. Plus, if you don't pay it, we're locking your account and you can't get to your data to copy it. So ever since then, I've encouraged people not to build their brand on other places. I have a bunch of stuff on SoundCloud, but, you know, it's linked. I send people to biptunia.com, Bravo India, Papa Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha.com. Biptunia is my new music project. One man band. I'm sick of bands, man. Bands are horrible. You don't want bands. Other people are just, you know, I do projects with like small ad hoc groups. Like I'm doing something right now I can't even talk about because it's anonymous and it's good and it's good for the world. And everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, sure. Except people who know me are going to be like, I believe you.
You've delivered on a few.
Yeah, I've delivered on a few dozen projects. So you know, I it's the thing is too with a podcast, if you're using SoundCloud, your RSS feed is going to break. Like even if you had mklords.com, oh, I'm going to register that right now. I'm kidding. So mklords.com, and she pointed it to her SoundCloud and said, I have some files here. That would be a lot smarter because then people, you know, if SoundCloud went down, she could make another website and actually, you know, pay $5 a year to have a web, you know, $15 a year to have a website. If she could ever afford it. And then she could already have built that brand and wouldn't lose it when SoundCloud goes out of business or when mp3.com suddenly charges you more money than you have. I was as broke as MK Lords back then, and they suddenly said we want $40 a month. And that was $40 a month in 1998, which is like $100 a month now probably, or $80 to $60 a month. I don't know. A lot. So yeah, don't build your brand somewhere else. Now, SoundCloud is not really a place for podcasts. People do it, but it's so easy to just, you're on Lisbon, right?
Yeah, Libsyn, yeah.
Okay. I still think you should have, you know, yakboy.com and point it at Libsyn because you need to build your, I mean, it's $12 a month, man. Do it. You don't even need to get web hosting. Just get a web address and point it there and then give that out for the next 50 years. I like Yakboy, by the way.
I wonder if there is a Yakboys. I wonder if they have Yakboy.
Oh, what is Yakboy? Oh, well, you don't want to use it if it's in use and it's a brand, even if it's not
right,
trademarked.
Well, there's Yakboys. There's the boys. I don't know. It doesn't look like Yak Boy is typing. But anyway, no, I think you're right. For some reason, my thought was $12. I forgot that you can just get the
oh, I don't address. Think you should do it, man, because Yak Boy is a food company. It's going to be too confusing. Oh, and then there's a band called Yak Boys performing Yak Attack. But, you know, get something short and sweet like that. And really, like, your domain name is, it's not that important that you have, like, the canon. Like, you know, if you're oh, I don't know. Let's say if someone, an example would be if somebody had, you know, if they were yakboy.com and then they wanted to get a website that was drone proof on Namecoin, if people actually paid attention to Namecoin instead of just complaining about what the government's doing on the internet, if they actually, you know, spent 5 minutes setting it up so they could view a website after its domain is seized, you know, they and yakboy.bit were already squatted on Namecoin. Like, see, a lot of people think, like, I must get that, and Namecoin doesn't have a way to do that, so it's flawed. No, what you do is just get the yakboy.net. It's really whatever you build it to, like whatever you tell people and they write down and they bookmark, you know, or, you know, a common one is like on Facebook and Twitter, you know, like some low rent rock star, like my friend Helios Creed, great guy, musician, has a little following, has for about 40 years, puts out, it influenced a lot of people. You know, he goes to get a like MySpace account and somebody already has Helios Creed as a fan site and won't give it up, and you know, the it's a hassle to try to get the overseer of the plantation, like MySpace or back then, or Facebeef now, or Twitter, to like wrest it away from them and give it to you. You have to send in your driver's license, whatever. He just skipped all that and just got the real Helios Creed. You know, stuff like that is a lot smarter than fighting over domain stuff that's not even really worth something.
Right.
So just build your brand as what it is and have something that's consistent over decades and send people to it. I mean, I don't use it that much anymore, but I've had kittyfeet.com since 1998. And I still have that website. It's where Anarchy Gumbo is hosted now, that other interview show I did. So I would say that SoundCloud is good if you're a musician, not a podcaster. And the quality's good. I mean, you were saying like she needs to get better quality and get off by getting off SoundCloud. No, you can make great sounding audio and have it play back pretty good sounding on SoundCloud. She just has bad sounding audio. She did a show with Davi Barker and they were like, it sounded like there was a Yeti mic on the table and they were both 5 or 6 feet away from it. It sounded like it was recorded in a bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think I don't know of anybody else who's on SoundCloud as a podcaster, but I do listen. I know like small artists, independent artists that are on there, and that's what I use it for. So otherwise I probably wouldn't listen to anything on SoundCloud. But I do.
SoundCloud's cool.
I don't know anything about those platforms really. Have you ever looked into Bandcamp or?
A lot of people said, "Oh, you're on SoundCloud. You need to get on Bandcamp too." Because I started doing music again recently for the first time in. I mean, I defined myself entirely as a musician from like age 14 in 1978. I was born in 64, so I started playing music when I was 14. Actually learned to play guitar, took acid, and made love for the first time at 14. So, good year for me. Is that too much information for your listeners?
No.
Are they all great yak farmers who get up and pray at 8 and 6 and 4 in the morning?
No, so, I think these guys are actually mostly fiends listeners.
Okay, yeah. So just slowly. So in other words, like Lulberts. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I built a crowd and you don't take it. You don't siphon it off. I think there's probably three or four people that Jim did siphon off because he was, Michael's horrible, and they went with him and said, I can't listen to Michael anymore. That's my imitation of people that leave the Fiends to go to another show. But yeah, no, I build the tiny audience. I build the small audience and you guys take a tiny slice with you. Yeah, I know Jim Jesus's web stats more or less because I made the Lulberts app, and like a good guy, I did not disable it after he quit being talking to me. So I can see how many installs it has, and it's about a 15th the number of the Fiends have. But it's the Fiends aren't huge. I'm not saying we're huge, and I don't really care about people's numbers. I care more about their quality. And Jim Jesus has great audio, so, and he's one of my best students. Him and this new Fiend co-host Phil Warmoth, my college buddy that I recently started back up talking to and am doing music with. This poet guy who's most poetry is horrible, but he's really good, and he's got a good voice for speaking it. And then I'm putting music with it. And we were in a band when I was 19 and he was like 21 in college called the Armless Children. And we actually played gigs and people threw beer at us because it was before its time. But he also he and Jim Jesus are, and you are my prime examples of they got it immediately. You took a little longer than they did, but you got it really quick. I mean, you took a couple weeks. They got it in like one session for Jim and two sessions for Phil of talking to him. And then everything they did after that's good. So yeah, man, I mean, I do a lot of things, but my real purpose on Earth is as a catalyst. I said that in my book in the year 2000, Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women, and I really believe it's true. Like introducing, I know a lot of people mainly for the purpose of using those people as a natural resource by introducing them to other people and having them go off and do something. Either, getting married like I did with Tad from the band Tad and my friend Peggy that I used to play in a band with called The Day I Lost My Virginity, or people that I, introduce and they start a company or a podcast or whatever. That's what I do. And I teach them how to get good audio, which isn't rocket science.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite, maybe it's not your quote, but I don't remember I've heard it from you. So it's one of these quotes.
He who dies with his art on the most hard drives wins.
No, that's you. That's definitely you. But there's one like the band, like they're talking about a band who, I'm butchering this quote, but it's like maybe we didn't become that popular, but we made so many other popular bands.
Oh, that was not my quote. That's what some record reviewer said about 30 years ago about the Sex Pistols, or maybe it was Joy Division. They said, I think it was the Sex Pistols. They said, it was the Velvet Underground. They said it was when the Velvet Underground's first record finally went gold, sold a million copies, which was like 24 years after it came out, it finally went gold. And some reviewer, it might have been Rolling Stone or Spin or something, said that that, you know, this record didn't sell that many copies, but everyone who bought it started a band. And that's true of several bands I like a lot. Like the Sex Pistols, that's probably true. Joy Division, that's probably true. And, you know, this podcast doesn't, my podcasts don't have that many listeners, but everyone who listens starts a podcast and I help them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, that's one of my inspirations to do what I'm doing. Cause I don't know, I think there's like an attractiveness to getting popular and being famous. And
well, I have a theory that everyone who gets more than 10,000 hardcore followers becomes insane. I think the number is around 10,000. you know, Kokesh, Molyneux, Berwick, Cantwell, the list goes on, you know, here's the thing is that people that become the stars in something, and someone's going to say, oh, you're just jealous, but I'm really not, because I have, you know, I have enough of a listenership to my ideas that it satisfies that need to reach out into the world. And since I'm 53 and pretty happy and have gone through the, you know, I slept with four women in one night kind of phase of 15 or 20 years of my life, that kind of thing, like that was a good day for me, you know. The day I slept with four women in the same day, not all at the same time. The day I slept with three women at the same time was a pretty good day too, but you know, that was kind of how I measured success back then. So that's worked out of me to where, you know, I'm not going to be on the internet screaming at some poor girl for, you know, not, and telling her like I have to go masturbate in a parking lot because when you cry it makes me lose my heart on, like Kokesh. I mean, or Larkin Rose, he's another one. So all of those people are kind of type A personality. And I'm not really an alpha male. I'm definitely not a beta male. I'm what I've heard called, I think it was a delta male or a gamma male. What's after beta? There's some there, but it's not lower than the other things. There's a name for that. I think it's a gamma human. And it's basically what a lot of libertarians are. Boston Tea Party made up that term, or first used it when I heard it. And it was something to the effect of, like, you know, kind of an alpha male that just wants to be left alone. Whereas most alpha males want everyone to know their business and are in everyone's face. And, you know, I don't know if people noticed who are listening, but I haven't been on the internet nearly as much lately as I have been, you know, even last, you know, like 3 months ago, 4 months ago. I'm doing a lot of stuff that's a lot cooler than sitting around on Facebook and beefing with people and saying really, really clever things that people share. I mean, I still spend, you know, 20 minutes a day on there, but I used to spend 4 or 5 hours, and a lot of people I know who are talented spend a lot of time on there. And I will say this, you're not going to change the world spending your whole day on Facebook, unless you're Virgil Vaduva. He seems to be able to pull it off. But, you know, the people that are really changing the world either aren't on Facebook or aren't on there much. And the people who change the world are generally not out in bars on a Saturday night either. They're generally sitting in front of a computer at home working. So, yeah. So if you're a loser, yeah, have hope, listeners. If you're a nerd like me.
Absolutely. Let's go back to, because we introduced you, but I want to talk a little bit about your punk rock phase. Because
hang on, let me save this file. Let me save this file.
Sure.
So I think that worked, Nick. Talk a bit.
All right. Hey, here it is. And I don't know if you can hear the cat purring, but she's here too.
You have to hold her up to the mic, I think, to do it.
Oh.
Okay, now I'm putting this on the floor. Yeah. Hang on a sec. I was in the middle of brilliance.
Hey, I'm here. This is Nick. We were talking about punk rock. And
I dropped the hardest mad science ever about David Cassidy and the Partridge Family. It was amazing. And then I accidentally knocked the Zoom H2 off the table, and it did something weird, which it shouldn't do, and yours probably wouldn't do because it's newer and better. But what's yours, the H4? Is that the video one?
I have the H4N, actually, I think.
Does that do video?
No.
I just got a webcam, and it's stellar, and I set it up, and then I realized, like, I'm not cute at all. I'm not going to use a webcam, so I'm going to set it up for a, like, security camera. Yeah, I don't know. I think people forgive me for being old and fat, but I don't want to look at me, so I don't think other people should. I mean, I don't hide what I look like. I've posted recent pictures in all my glory, but I don't think it'd be entertaining to watch me talking anymore. So, you kids, beauty, enjoy it. It'll happen to you and you and you. I'm pointing at the mic. All right, So we lost that data, and like my device locked up and I couldn't record. And what I had to do was I could get the data off it, But the second file was 0 bytes, which means because the SD card ejected when it hit the floor. And then it was like, I put it back in and it said, you know, SD card locked. And I was like, okay, SD cards have this little like physical thing on them you can move. I was like, maybe that's moved. Yeah, it's a little physical. They had this on floppy disk too. It's like a physical little switch you can move to lock them. So they're read only. Although it's up to the computer to honor that. Technically, a computer could still write to them or overwrite them or erase them, but most won't. So what I did was imported the data from the first one. The second one said 0 bytes because it was ejected and didn't save. And then I couldn't make it record again. It was like the SD card was like in play only mode, and it wasn't the physical switch because I remember I looked at it. And I'm like, oh, years ago, I super glued this on so it couldn't be accidentally turned off. And if you do that, leave it dry for 24 hours before you stick it back in the device, because super glue is supposed to dry in 60 seconds. But if you stick it in, you know, within 5 minutes or even 10 minutes or an hour, it might stick in there and never come out because it's not totally dry for like 24.
Yeah.
So
that would suck.
So what I did was put it in my computer, put the SD card in my computer. And I want to say that most unclear communication comes from people not defining the terms it or he or she. When they're talking about several people and they said, well, he said that, you know, like, which he in this sentence are you talking about? Which leads to having to have stilted, you know, sentences like Nick and Davi were learning from me and he didn't learn from me. You don't know who I'm talking about, but if I say Nick and Davi were learning from me and Davi didn't learn from me, then it's clear, which sounds kind of stilted, but it's better than, you know. And what people say that you don't have to do is it's okay to end a sentence with a preposition. The only reason teachers parrot not to do that is because some statist named Noah Webster, who wrote the first dictionary in America, made that rule up because it sounded right to him. And published it in one of the first English books in America. And it's just, it's kind of like the state. People still venerate it because the people who taught them do. And, yeah. You know, research the 100 monkeys thing. You know about that, right, Nick?
No, I don't know about 100 monkeys?
Yeah.
Is this an experiment?
It's a psychological experiment with monkeys where, like, it's something to the effect of, like, I don't remember the monkey one, but there's an example my dad told me when I was a kid about sheep, because he was a farmer, about actual sheep, not the people on the internet that think they're smarter than me. He said that they used to do this thing where, you know, it was expensive to put a lot of electric fence around a place. So what you do is just get like you'd rent a portable electric fence that would only go around like a half acre, and you just put it around the sheep, and you know, the sheep would try to get past it and they'd get shocked a few times. And then after a week or two, you could remove the fence, and not only would they never go to the fence again because they're afraid of getting shocked, like their great, great, great grandchildren would never go to the fence. And like maybe every few generations, you'd have to redo it one time. But yeah, like, you know, the next generation would just learn, oh, don't go near the fence from the other ones. And then it would go on, passed on and on without anyone even knowing why that's the case. And that's kind of how the state is. You know, people say, well, we must have roads because my grandfather had roads because of the state. So watch your 100 monkeys there.
Yeah,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's 100 monkeys. I don't know, it's something that people think they're smart like to quote.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. But yeah, it's true. I mean, you can do this with all animals. Pigs are smarter than sheep, and I think yaks are too, so they'll test the fences more than sheep will, but it still works. Yep. I mean, I can keep pigs in. I can, you know, I just gotta have the electric fence on like once a day per month.
Really?
Maybe.
You do? You have an electric fence?
I do. I have
cool
one to keep the pigs.
They're sexy. I used to touch them when I was a kid on my aunt's farm. Yeah, they don't kill you. And if the ground's not wet, you don't get really, really, really badly shocked. You just, it's like, whoa, it's kind of a kick. It was kind of like drugs before I was old enough to take drugs. Oh, do you see the picture I sent you? I couldn't find the one at me at 6, but I sent the one at me at 12 wearing the shirt my mom said David Cassidy wore.
Yeah.
It's kind of hip.
This black one with collars.
So you asked me what music I liked, and I said the first thing I heard was One-Eyed, One-Horn, Flying Purple People Eater, the novelty song. Google it, people. YouTube it. And then I got into the Partridge Family and loved them to the point where, like, I would have been crushed if David Cassidy had died. I'm glad he died when I was 53 and I could barely care. Because I was a fanboy. I mean, I had like, it wasn't a crush, but I had like a, oh my God, I want to be as cool as this fake rock star on TV.
Yeah.
And then my sisters, who were much older, went off to, when I was born, my brother was in college. Now, did I talk about the happy accident last time, last half hour or this half hour? Did we lose that?
I think we lost that.
Okay, so.
I think we did.
So I'm 53 and my dad's 97. And my mother died at 75, like, you know, in the 90s. My mother was 40 and my dad was 43 when I was born. And my brother was in college when I was born and my sisters were in high school. And I asked my mother one time if I was an accident. And she looked real thoughtful and said, you were born and you were conceived and raised in love, which is a really sweet way of saying you were an accident, kid. I think I talked about that last hour, half hour. But anyway, we want to be complete here. So if I repeat myself when under stress, I repeat myself when under stress. I'm not under stress. That's a line from a song I like by King Crimson Mach 4 with Gary Newman, with, Adrian Belew. So then my sisters went off to college and I found a few records of theirs in the attic that I really liked. And one was Rolling Stones album, one was a Beatles album, and one was I got the Beatles at the library. She had Rolling Stone album and a Simon and Garfunkel album, and I fell in love with that stuff. And then I went to the library and discovered the Beatles and Blue Cheer. Now, Blue Cheer, no one's heard of listening to. Have you heard of Blue Cheer?
No, definitely not.
Blue Cheer were pretty much the first heavy metal group. I mean, there was a group before that that was heavy metal. I think they were called Caveman or Neanderthal or Monster or something like that. But no one's heard of them. Like, Blue Cheer were kind of popular. They were named after a particularly strong strain of LSD in the 60s. Made by Owsley, who later became the sound man for the Grateful Dead and basically, you know, was a millionaire from making LSD and was on, like, he didn't care about money. He was on like a religious journey to spread psychedelic thought and drugs. So he took all his money and bought the Grateful Dead and built for them the first actually really good rock and roll PA system. Like before that, like when the Beatles played Shea Stadium for 70,000 people, I think it was their last show, you know, that like the recordings of that, all you hear is the girl screaming and sort of like a melody of a Beatles song, like it's playing in a radio in the next room through a closed door. I mean, they were playing like a baseball stadium, an outdoor baseball stadium, using the same amps they would use in a club playing for 50 people and the same PA system. Like, nobody thought back then, you know, now that rock and roll is getting really big, we need to make the sound system bigger. No, but Owsley invented that with the Grateful Dead. And now everyone, you know, stadiums have good sound and so do clubs sometimes. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Partridge Family. So the progression was One-Eyed, One-Horned, Fly Purple, People Eater, Partridge Family, and then real music like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Simon and Garfunkel, who were kind of puss-pussy, but that album, The Best of Simon and Garfunkel, is great, and it actually is the first rock record or pop record that has a synthesizer on it. I mean, yeah, there was Switched on Bach by Carlos / Wendy Williams, one of the first famous people to get a sex change operation, and... But yeah, that was it was painstakingly reconstructing Bach stuff on mono synths one track at a time, doing an orchestra, which was the record that kind of made everyone want to get a synthesizer. But yeah, so then I got into Blue Cheer, who were heavy as heck. I mean, it's loud. It's like, it's kind of like Jimi Hendrix, but uglier is the best way to describe it. I liked it a lot. Then I got into, Pink Floyd, prog rock, Emerson, Lake & Palmer, Moody Blues, King Crimson from like age, 12 to 18 or 19. And then I heard the Sex Pistols and my life changed. Actually, I heard the Sex Pistols and didn't like them at first because their singer had a t-shirt that said Pink Floyd and under it he wrote "sucks." And I'm like, man, that he's a bad man. But, you know, that whole thing was a reaction to, like, the rock and roll had gotten too big. It really had, you know, and then it got too big again. Like, the punk rock killed it, and then it came crawling back out and became big again. And you had stuff like Journey in Kansas, like stadium rock that was really polished, and Boston, what they called corporate rock, and then hair metal, And then Kurt Cobain just murdered that. I mean, the Nirvana murdered that. And there's, I've heard interviews with a lot of those hair metal guys, like, you know, Brett Michaels and people from Poison and bands like that and Motley Crue. Like, those people, like, you know, when they finally got sober and went through AA and had to do their list of people that they had resentments again so they could get rid of the resentments. Like, a lot of them, like, their first resentment was probably Kurt Cobain because he killed their career, you know? I mean, that kind of rock went from cool, like, the coolest thing in the world, you know, hair metal, to like, you know, playing stadiums, to like could barely get a gig in a club because of grunge just murdered it. Wow. It's cool. And so by that time, I was playing in a band. Like, I'm not influenced by Kurt Cobain. Like, he and I are influenced by the same people. And as I say in almost every interview I do, Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic and Dave Grohl of Nirvana loved my band Bomb. And you could say, why, that's a bold claim, Michael, except that I have peer review in the form of Chris Novoselic interview on the Freedom Fiends, which is also on YouTube, and him saying all that, like saying like, yeah, man, Kurt Cobain turned me on to your band, Michael. He brought me this cassette and it had this song called I Loved You Then I Died. And he was like, this is great. Listen to it. And I was like, yeah, this is great. Who is this? And he's like, it's this band Bomb from San Francisco. And, my band never got famous. I mean, we got signed to Warner Brothers. We toured the world. We have people still write me and are like, man, I love your band. Like, someone posted that. A stranger posted that on my Facebook yesterday, if you saw it. You know, maybe. I don't know who that was, but he's like, man, thank you for making this music. So people are still discovering it. But, you know, we generally played to between 100 and 300 people in clubs. And sometimes on tour, we'd play to 10 people. I mean, you know, 300 was a great night. 100 was a really good night. But, you know, the records are still around. And then I put them all on the internet, so they're really still around. But and that site, the Bomb site, well, it's actually michaelwdean.com/bomb, all caps, B-O-M-B, actually gets more downloads than any site of mine except the Freedom Fiends, which is a daily thing. And this is like something that, you know, hasn't recorded since 98 when we did a reunion.
Right.
But yeah.
I really enjoyed Bomb when I got turned on it by you. That's when I started liking grunge rock a little bit. I'm still like a hip hop fan. I just can't get away from rap.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, it's your generation.
Like, but
although I've made some good hip hop too with Nima Vidati, who's closer to your generation, but still,
yeah,
you're the age of his younger brother. His little brother, who's now a fiend.
He's younger than me.
Yeah, he's the new fiend. He's the new Nick, man. We have a 16-year-old fiend who can't do shows except on summer and holidays because he's in school and really busy and doesn't want to drop out because he likes, which is weird because he lives with his mother, who is a school teacher and a libertarian, and would probably oversee him homeschooling himself, but he likes school because he has a lot of friends there and he likes sports and he does sports there.
Yeah.
But
now, I know a lot of kids who I'm like, dude, you could be doing whatever you wanted right now, but you want to stay in school. I know there's a few of those friends that are just like, nah,
if you'd said that to me, I'd be like, how do I do that? To the point where when I was 15 and at the church farm school, this boarding school in Pennsylvania I got sent away to and later got kicked out of for calling the headmaster a fat, bald, overly Christian old fart in a letter I wrote to Mick Jagger telling him to buy the school, and the letter came back unopened. So I ended up going to college at 17 because my old high school didn't want me back. They were like, oh, you're smart. You and Natalie Merchant, she did this last year. Like, they wanted to get rid of her. And then they wanted to get rid of me because they didn't want, you know, smart people who don't like authority there. So they sent us to college. So where were we? Oh, Bomb was not a grunge band, by the way. I mean, we're kind of like played with grunge bands, but no, it was something else. And, you know,
how would you describe it then?
I don't know. Yeah. Bomb music. Yeah. I mean, that's a problem I have. And it's a great problem to have of not being able to say really what your genre of music is. I'm having, but it's a problem because it makes it hard to market. Like grunge, grunge wasn't, you know, all the bands called grunge, a lot of them were very different. Nirvana and Pearl Jam don't sound the same at all. And Nirvana and Tad, you know, my friend Tad that I hooked up with my friend Peggy, and they're now happily married for a decade. Tad created grunge, but also another friend of mine created grunge, this band called Fang, that actually Nirvana cover a song by Fang. You can YouTube this. It's called The Money Will Roll Right In. And Nirvana covered that live somewhere, and it's a very popular video on YouTube because it's a great song, and it's ironic for these millionaires to be singing it. But this band called Fang recorded that, and Fang's record Landshark that's on is my friend Sammy Town on vocals, and Sammy Town later went to prison for 6 years for murdering his girlfriend after catching her in bed with somebody. And Tom Flynn played guitar on that, and Tom Flynn ran Boner Records, the label that Bomb was on. I would say Tom Flynn invented grunge, because if you listen to that record from, and I would say Tom and Sammy, the bass player and drummer were just there, whoever they were, but Tom Flynn, who is my friend on Facebook, you can friend him, and Sam McBride is Sammy Town, is my friend on Facebook, you should friend him. Those guys invented grunge, and really, like, you know, they're still touring clubs for, like, you know, 50 people. They should have a Grammy Award. They should be in the indoctrinated into whatever that state music thing is in Ohio. What is it? Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Because if you listen to that record Landshark that came out 3 years before Nirvana started, it sounds exactly like Nirvana later sounded. A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I keep thinking I hear, like, the feed coming in to take us out to a break, but we're not on radio.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're not.
I was going to say, there might be something. There's a pump running in the way background.
Is that what you kids are calling it?
It is a pump.
So did we answer all your questions before we move on to another one? I feel like I started six stories and only finished three of them.
Yeah, maybe. What I was interested in is kind of how you started off. And I guess what I would ask is how did you get from, where did the band start? Because you were listening to music, so you said you were into, like, progressive.
Where did
rock,
Bomb start?
Kind of got into grunge. Yeah, so, like, in that era, I guess, is, like, when you started. I mean, when did you start making music?
Well,
first off,
I started playing music when I was 14. I got a guitar and, like, took about four lessons from some guy in my town, and it was, like, you know, the lessons were, like, $5, and that was a lot of money back then for an hour lesson. And, you know, all of a sudden my mother's like, I don't know if we can afford that. And then I was like, you know, I don't think I really need it, because I didn't like going over to his house and having him tell me what to do. So I just took like three or four lessons, maybe five or six, but definitely under 10. And then just got a book of guitar chords for, like, Beatles songs, and then started playing them. I later taught myself to read music, but can really barely. I read music like a retarded person that can read reads. I mean, you could give me some, you know, like a simple Bach etude or something, and I could sit there for 8 or 10 hours and then be able to play, you know, a 2-minute song. I haven't read music in 20 years. I haven't had reason to, but I can. It's funny, too, because the music I make now with synthesizers in Cubase, there's a function to print out a score of things you do in MIDI. And so I'm looking at music sheet music for things I write. And some of it's like, I can understand what the notes are. And I'm like, how did I come up with that? Like, I would never in a million years, like, have written that on paper, you know? But
yeah.
So I played in crappy little bands at my boarding school, played in a band called London. There've probably been 1,000 bands called London. You know, they never did anything. Then, let's see. So I moved to Charlottesville, Virginia when I was 18, and I started a band called Baby Opaque. And Baby Opaque was really good. It was the first really good band I was in. And that band put out a 7-inch EP and a 12-inch LP, and then broke up. And those records, like, you know, they cost money used. Like, those are collector's items. And there's people that still write me, like, very occasionally, and are like, man, I found you. Were you in this band? This band's great. Like, that band had a little following, and a bigger following after it broke up. But nothing like Bomb. And Bomb wasn't in anything like popular bands. But it was great music, Baby Opaque. If you can find any of it online, or buy this, you know, single on eBay, for someone that doesn't know, they can sell it for $80 and they're selling it for $5. Buy it, because sometimes it's on there for $80 or $100. So that band was really good, but I was playing in Charlottesville, Virginia, like, going nowhere. I mean, like, the big band in Charlottesville, Virginia at that time was the Dave Matthews Band. Like, they were just starting, and they were just starting when I left there. I actually did a gig playing with Boyd Tinsley, the black dude that plays violin in that, who I recently saw. This is really cute. I played a gig with him and me playing. I was playing acoustic guitar and he was playing fiddle. It was before he was in that band. Played at a club I worked at called the Mineshaft, that's no longer there because the owner had a coke habit and things tend to disappear, including businesses, mm-hmm. when you have a coke habit. Good times. Anyway, so Yeah, Boykins. I recently saw a picture of him in some national magazine, like after that whole Charlottesville kerfluffle, because I lived in Charlottesville. You know, it was weird watching all that Nazi stuff, that Nazi stuff down there, because I knew every corner where they were, where those protests were. Like, I knew that stuff. Yeah. Like, I used to go drink beer in that park at night. The place where that woman was murdered was 2.5 blocks from this club called Muldowney's on Water Street, up the street, like from where that guy started driving from. I don't even know if Muldowney's is still there. It was a gay bar, gay Irish bar, that was the only place that would let punk bands play when I started playing in bands. And Baby Opaque wasn't really a punk band, but we played in punk bands. And I did play in a hardcore punk rock band called the Beef People. Beef, like pod beef. Beef People. Singer in that band's dead from alcohol. That band is on the Freedom Fiends blog. Not the Freedom Fiends main site. If you go to the blog and search Beef People, that music will come up. You can download it free. But yeah, we used to play on that street, Water Street, a lot. I played 30 gigs there. I actually got hit in the head by accident with a bass guitar and ended up getting 3 stitches at Muldowney's Bar by Dave Brocky, God rest his smutty soul, who was the singer in Gwar later and recently died. And Gwar is continuing, no original members. And generally, I'd say that's incredibly cheesy, but for Gwar, that works because they're characters in costumes. And the reason I'm happy Gwar is still doing it is because finally, high def video is available to everybody. Like the old, you know, the old video of Gwar is back when their heyday with Dave Brocky was so grainy that you can't even tell what's going on. And like now it's like, oh my God, this is almost too real. It's scary. There's blood coming at me. Oh no. So yeah. But yeah, Dave Brocky hit me in the head with a bass by accident at a show where he jumped in the audience and I was jumping in the audience at the same time as a spectator. And we intersected at a 45-degree angle and I had 3 stitches that night. And he said, Michael, don't sue me. And I'm like, I'm not going to sue you. And he's like, okay, you get guest list for life for any show I ever do. And I'm like, I'm going to hold you to that. This is in his band Death Piggy that was tiny. And then later he was in Gwar and like they'd play in San Francisco and I'd be like, you know, to 1,000 people and I'd show up and be like, I'm on the list. And they'd be like, who? No, you're not. Tell Dave Brocky Michael Dean's here. And they'd radio back and someone would get him. And they're like, yep, he's on the list. It's pretty cool. So
that's cool.
I suffered for his art.
That's right.
So yeah, then I played in Bomb. Bomb broke up. Bomb was together from 86 to 93. I think I was like a year off of Nirvana. I think they were together from 85 to 92 or 87 to 94. No, Cobain died in 93 because I got sober in 94, a year after he died. I remember that. Like when he died, I was like, man, maybe it's time to give up this heroin stuff. And I kind of looked like him back then. And my mother really thought I looked like him. Like she'd see him on TV and be, Michael, you need to get off drugs. Look at this guy. He's got a drug problem. I know you do too. I know you say you don't, but yeah, mother's tears are a sad thing, brother. Don't make any.
Yeah, I hope not. How did you get started with heroin? Because that's a pretty hard drug. at least to me, like I've, you know, I've
its reputation is worse. Its bark is worse than its bite. It kind of is if you do it smart. I'm not saying do heroin. And today I think it's a lot more dangerous because it's cut with fentanyl a lot.
Right.
And fentanyl is so powerful. Fentanyl is like 10 or 20 times as powerful per weight as heroin. So basically like, you know, someone will buy and people can mail order it from China. Without, you know, like, and people can like send an envelope, like a thick envelope of it that's got like, you know, 50,000 doses. So it's pretty easy to get into the country.
Wow.
And there are labs in China that will send it here. Like you can order it on a credit card. I've heard read articles. So like people will get that and then cut it with, you know, something white that looks like heroin, like baby laxative or something. And, you know, they have to cut it to have it have the strength of street heroin. They have to cut it like 50-1 or 100-1 or more. Mm-hmm. And it's really difficult without a laboratory to evenly distribute, you know, a gram of fentanyl in a kilo or, you know, half kilo or whatever, 100 grams of baby laxative. If you're doing it the way people usually cut heroin, which is taking 2 playing cards, putting a bandana around your mouth and then putting on a dish or something and just playing with it back and forth with 2 playing cards, dumping it on top of each other until it's pretty mixed. And if you do, or using a flour sifter and doing that. And if you, allegedly, I've heard on TV. So if you, I never did that back in the day. Allegedly. Don't try this at home. Cash Newman says, don't do this. Don't do what I didn't do. Allegedly. Not a guarantee. For educational purposes only. Wait, I've got an app for this. What am I sitting talking into a mic like a common troll when I have Pocket Alibi? So, yeah, when they cut it, it can very easily kill you because they don't cut it evenly. You know, you're going to get a dose that either someone will get a dose that has none in their $50 bag, and someone will get a dose that has $700 worth in a $50 bag, which sounds like a bargain, but if you shoot $700 worth of fentanyl, you're dead, even if you are a junkie with a tolerance.
Yeah.
So worms. So how did I get into it? Tony Fag. Yeah. Tony Fag. Anthony Michael Paul Short, the drummer from BOM, who I don't talk to anymore, is one of the few people, a lot of people, like I block a lot of idiots on the interwebs, but not people that I like, you know, lived with in a van for 7 or 8 years. I mean, this guy was like a brother, like a bigger brother to me, because I didn't really have a male figure in my life. You know, my dad was always working and my parents got divorced when I was 8, and I saw him on, you know, every other weekend I'd stay with him. And he was, you know, he meant well and he didn't beat me, but he just wasn't a very effective man, I would say, back then.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say kind of he is now because he's 97 and he can still dance with ladies. I think that's winning life. Do you see that picture?
That picture on Facebook.
Yeah. My dad in the home dancing with some younger woman who was like 80 for like, you know, band night. That was awesome. So he's winning now. I mean, really, I could live a long time if I'm getting better. My mother's genes killed her at 75. That's still a good long life. My dad is 97, and I've got his genes too, so I could live. I could bury you all, Nick. I could be at your funeral loading yak hair onto your grave with a shovel. When you die of natural causes.
Bad genes.
You do?
Two of my grandparents died at like 50. And then the other ones, I guess one, my grandpa, he made it to 92. And then my grandfather's kicking around still. My dad's dad is kicking around somewhere. He might be 80 by now.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
My dad's dad died at 24 of what they call pernicious anemia, which is now thought to have been leukemia. And my daughter died at 22 with the same thing. So I'm a crapshoot with genes here. We'll see how it goes. But I know a DNA scientist, so he can help me. You know that guy, Kevin McKernan, who's like the Liberty DNA guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I do know that.
The guy that sequenced the marijuana genome to protect it from patents. Yeah. He's awesome. I'll have him.
I need to get back. Yeah.
You should interview him.
I've listened to him a few. I've heard
he's amazing. Interviews with him. He's amazing. He's been on Anarchy Gumbo 2 or 3 times. And
that's probably where I heard
he chipped in on donations for Fiend Phone. And he's a good guy, man. Yep. Yeah. So did I answer your question? Oh, I didn't get to what I'm doing with music now. So I didn't play music for a long time. Like probably, I mean, I experimented with recording when you could first do it on a computer. Cause I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because I used to go into studios and either me or the record company was paying between $20 an hour and $100 an hour for us to record. And then I was like, wait, you can do this at home. And I started doing it at home in like 97, but computers weren't very fast and microphones and digital interfaces weren't very good. So unless you spent like $1,000, it didn't sound very good. And now all that stuff's really good and really cheap. I mean, I have like a $100 digital interface for the mic. I'm using the same mic I'm using now, which is what, $50, $70, $40. And then a $100 keyboard controller. And with that, I'm making records that are like better than anything I've ever done except BOM, this band Biptunia. And I mean, I played some music with Nima Vidotti for the Guns and Weed movie, but basically, and I did make a record when I first moved to Wyoming with a punk rock record of me playing everything called Right Arm of Wyoming, which is not a right wing term. It's named after, there's a name for the FAL rifle, FN FAL, which is called the right arm of the free world because it's the battle rifle of every non-communist nation in the world except America. And I actually bought one and it was just, I loved it, but it was too much gun for me. It's like, it's I'm too short for it. It's a big rifle. So, but Right Arm of Wyoming was my band, and I think it's one of my email addresses too. So I played that, but that was just to like, you know, break in my new house basically. And then I played some music with Nima, but I haven't really played any music, you know, for 20 years, seriously, since BOM broke up. And now I'm just, music's just flowing out of me because suddenly I'm like, oh my God, I can do all of this. I don't have to put up with drummers. There's an app, you know, there's a plugin for that. And like, I'm programming stuff that's, you know, sounds like real drums sometimes and sometimes sounds like synth drums and sometimes both. It's like better than the best real drummers I played with. you know, doesn't speed up and slow down, doesn't show up drunk, doesn't yell at me. So Tony Fagg turned me on to heroin. He was like, he's like a week older than me, but he was like a decade wiser than me. I mean, I moved from small town Westfield, New York to like being insulated in a college town in Virginia and not really even seeing like the darker side of that town much, to, even though I was playing in punk rock bands, to San Francisco, which was like the first really mean, dirty city I'd ever seen. Like, one of my first experiences with Tony was like probably a couple nights after he turned me on to heroin. And he got a kick out of turning me on to heroin. Like, you know, you're going to have this problem now. You're like me. You're in the club. He kind of had that vibe about it. And they say the first hit's free. He actually charged me $6 for giving me a tiny bit of heroin that barely did anything. So I went to this party with him one time. Like, he was like my badass older brother. You know, I was like this naive kid. And he took me to this party in the Tenderloin, which is like horrible part of town. Like, okay, if you watch this amazing new show called Chase, have you seen it? It's a Hulu show, but I watched it somewhere else. It's the guy who plays Dr. House playing a non-drug addicted, non-dick doctor, psychiatrist named Dr. Chase, who's just depressed. And there's this scene where this buddy he makes, this really big guy who likes to hurt people who are bad, you know, wants to show him what he can do. Spoiler alert. And he's like, you know, hop in my car, takes him somewhere, gets out, and they're walking down the street. And they, you know, like the big guy takes him into this bodega and says, get some money out of the machine. And there's like all these junkies at 4 a.m. looking at him in the bodega. And he takes out like $40, and his big friend's like, no, I'll take out more. And he takes out, he got like $100 in cash, and he puts it in his pocket, and like he leaves. And then like three of these junkies that were hanging out in the bodega start following them. Mm-hmm. And like basically the big guy like takes a turn and walks down an alley, and these three guys follow him, and they're like, hey, we need to borrow some money. And the guy pulls out a knife, you know, the junkie pulls out a knife, and the big guy just like beats all three of them to within an inch of their life. It's like his audition to the doctor of like, you know, this is what I can do to take care of that abusive husband, you know. That's his audition. And the neighborhood they're in, like, there's, you know, like it's really scary. And the doctor's like, I don't know this part of town. The big guy's like, of course you don't. That's the Tenderloin. And it looks and sounds exactly like it does in this show. Sean Duvalli turned me on that show. I love it. Thank you, Sean. Thank you for your service. So that Tony took me to a party in that neighborhood at some loft, like some rock and roll party. And so I go into the party and, you know, I'm drinking, I'm having fun. And like Tony knows everyone there because he went to high school with him, like actually grew up in San Francisco, which not many people did, but he did. And those people did. Mm-hmm. And so Tony finally leaves, and I was wearing his girlfriend's leather jacket. And he's like, take care of that leather jacket, man. Don't lose that. I'm going to be in trouble, which means you're going to be in trouble if you lose that. And I'm like, I won't take it off. And he split on his motorcycle, and I got really, really, really drunk. And there was a drum set there, and I sat down and took my leather jacket off, put it behind me on the drum stool on the floor, started playing the drums. And they're like, hey, dude, stop playing the drums. You suck. And I'm like, no, man, I'm good. Let me show you this. And I kept playing. And finally, like, you know how like they say drunk people like, oh, he's so drunk he put on the lampshade on his head. Mm-hmm. My lampshade was playing drums at parties. That's not the first. This isn't the first time I was physically removed from a party for playing unwanted drumming. So they threw me out. So I, you know, they're like, you got to get out of here. And I'm like, no. And they're like, get out of here. It's our house. So I pick up my leather jacket, put it on, and I start to leave out the door, and suddenly like five guys are grabbing the leather jacket and pulling it off me. Like, that's not yours, man. Give it to me. And I'm like, fuck, these guys are robbing me in the ghetto. And like, I ran out of there and like slipped out of the jacket, and they were chasing me and they had the jacket. And I'm like, fuck you, I'm calling the police. Cause that's how I thought back then. Or I wasn't really gonna, but I thought I should say that, I guess, which is really not the thing you should say to a bunch of drug dealers in the Tenderloin. So they're chasing me, and finally I like slipped down an alley, probably the same one this beating was in this show. And they pass me, and they finally leave and go back. And like, I go around the corner and find a payphone, call Tony. And I'm like, Tony, those guys robbed me. They took the leather jacket at that party. And he's like, fuck you. God damn it. I'll be there right now. And he gets on his motorcycle and like goes to the party, finds me, takes me to the party. And he's like, talks to his buddies who stole the jacket. And it turns out I'd picked up the wrong leather jacket. I picked up this girl, Dana's leather jacket, who later became a really good friend of mine. And like, you know, he was there with this guy, Dave Bach. And I later knew two Dave Bachs who did sound in San Francisco. And this was one of them. And that's a whole nother funny story, because I'd heard that Dave Bach, who recorded the Bomb record, first Bomb record, Dave Bach, B-O-C-K, who's a friend of mine on Facebook and now makes Bach microphones, which sell for $5,000 and are in demand because they're that good. Dave Bach. So I heard he lived in LA. So I call information. I'm like, yeah, give me the number for David Bach, please. And she gave me the number. And I called this guy. And he said, this is when I first moved to LA in 2001. And he said, I said, hey, this is Michael Dean. Is this Dave Bach? And there was silence. And he said, yes. And I said, is this Dave Bach from San Francisco? And he said, yes. And I said, is this Dave Bach, the sound, the guy who does audio from San Francisco? And he said, yes. Well, I said, this is Michael Dean. Don't you remember me? And he's like, are you the guy that stole Dana's leather jacket at that party in the Tenderloin? So it turns out this is a different Dave Bach, who spells his name Dave B-A-C-H, like the composer Bach, who's also a sound guy from San Francisco. But like Dave Bach, B-O-C-K, worked in a recording studio recording bands as a producer and engineer, and then later made microphones to sell to studios. This Dave Bach does audio for Hollywood movies. Like he did the audio for my Hubert Selby movie, but he was slumming. He did it for $5,000, which was slumming, and it was a favor. Because he does like all of the, who's that comedian that's horrible that did the golf movie? That guy. God, what's his name?
The golf? Adam Sandler?
Yeah. He does. He's like Adam Sandler's sound guy, sound mixer his movies. And does other stuff, but, you know, he did Sideways, bunch of stuff. But that was a weird coincidence. So I don't know if I really answered your question. So the other day, you know, about 4 months ago, I was like, you know, I guess you could record with just a computer controller keyboard. You don't need like an organ or a synthesizer now. So I bought this thing and just started playing music. It's been flowing out of me since. And I put out a record. And I'm making another.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I've listened to a couple of them. I haven't listened to all the music you've put up yet.
No one has. I haven't even.
But I've enjoyed it. I'm not an artist. Like, I don't know how to make music, and I'm not really interested in learning, but I just, like everybody, pretty much everybody, you know, I love listening to it. And
not everybody does.
Yeah.
I didn't for a long time. I didn't listen to music for that whole period. I didn't play music. I barely listened to music. I was busy doing other things, but so I got to wrap this up. We've done an hour, half hour plus 45 minutes, whatever math that is. But do you have like any closing questions or anything? So I'm losing my voice too.
Yeah, well, I guess I don't have any closing questions, but other than you've plugged your work a lot. You got a lot of work. So it's kind of like,
it's too hard to plug it all
out there. I'll go through this episode. I'll listen to it anyway.
Yeah.
And I'll write down each of the things you mentioned. And I'll throw it in the show notes. But freedomfiends.com and kittyfeet.com and
Biptunia. MichaelWDean.com, Biptunia.com. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Fiendphone.com.
Yeah, I feel like if I ask you any more questions, I'd ask more.
You've asked me four questions. Yeah, it'll be another 20 minutes if you ask me a question.
Yeah, right. So I guess we will leave off at that. But thank you for joining me, Michael. I'm really happy to get you on, and we should do it again.
I got a last closing statement. So I said this a long time ago, and I still stand by it. I think it's good advice for people. Do everything as if it's the only thing you'll be remembered for. Yeah, I mean, don't like if you're starting out in art or something, or good at art or something, and like someone asks you to do something and they don't have money and you do it anyway, don't half-ass it, because that might be the one thing you're known for.
Yeah.
And you don't want any crap out there with your name on it. There's crap out there with my name on it, but it's pre-internet, so you'll never find it. I mean, I might have made a cassette and given it out to 30 people, but dubbed them myself. But yeah, I was lucky. I'm really lucky the internet didn't exist until I could like fully form, hatch, till I was hatched. All right, brother, man, it's been great. I'm going to go edit this for you and send it, because we couldn't do it on Skype because Skype had to update 20 times and Skype sucks. So you can't record Fiendphone on your end. So we did Fiendphone, which I helped invent, and we recorded it on my end. So I'm going to go edit this for you and send it. I mean, it'll be a raw file, but I'll get it to you pretty quick, man. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your service, man. Keep up the good work, Nick. Worms.